welcome one and all once again to Dual Worlds in episode 115. We are 2 weeks, I think, removed, three weeks removed from E3, and there is, like, nothing going on in the gaming industry. I get that it's a transitional period, but there's, like, nothing. No releases, no news, everybody's just kind of quiet into the next convention. So we're going to be talking about what we've been playing, which is a mixture of new and old and not so great on Phil's end. But before we get this, introduce our panel. We have Daniel.
Hello.
And we have Phil.
Yeah, July's going to be pretty dry this year, eh?
I think July, and I want to say August, but no. August up until the last week.
not August for me. Excuse me. August, Final Fantasy 14 comes out, and so does Pikmin 3, so I'm going to be good.
And Killer is Dead. Don't forget Killer is Dead.
Oh, yeah. Killer's Dead.
Well, August has a lot of games. Like, everything's situated in the back half of August.
Yeah.
So I could be mistaken. And it also depends, because July is actually a pretty decent month if you're in Europe. I think you get Pikmin 3 and you get Mario and Luigi Dream Team Bros.
Whoa. In July?
Yeah, they get it in July. We get it in August.
Holy crap. That's crazy.
Suck it, America, a game I don't care about is coming out here, but first.
Wait, which one?
Well, I don't have a Wii U, and I don't really care about the Mario RPGs. Like,
okay, we're gonna take a break. If you don't hear Daniel when we come back, it's not my fault.
I haven't really played one, and it's like JRPGs aren't really my thing.
Yeah, but this isn't like a the franchise. Yeah, I always call it a franchise. This and Paper Mario are kind of like my first JRPGs. They're JRPGs in design, but they're very, very user-friendly. They don't have a lot of grinding or a lot of the tedious tasks.
If there's a demo on the eShop, I might check it out.
Yeah,
I don't know if there is going to be one.
Like, that sounds like they're made to be, like, simple, and I guess they are, but, like, they're just a lot more fun than other JRPGs. And if you're going to start with, like, a Mario and Luigi game, Bowser's Inside Story is... like,
a great place to start. One of my favorite games of the last generation.
Oh, yeah, it's excellent.
But, it's worth checking out. I do hope they have demos. I mean, I think everybody can benefit from putting up demos this summer since there's like nothing coming out for the next couple of weeks.
If you start with Paper Mario, Thousand Year Door is the absolute best one on that.
Well, if you start there, I mean, where are you going to end?
That's true.
You can't go to Stick a Star.
You know what? It's funny because, like, I've always held Paper Mario in such a high regard, but really the only great Paper Mario game is Thousand Year Door, and then the other Paper Marios are kind of okay. But
What was Thousand Year Door released on?
GameCube, yeah.
I might, because if it's not too expensive, because there are some GameCube games that are really expensive for no reason. Like, I want to get a copy of XD Gale of Darkness, and they're really expensive, and it's not even that great of a game.
Then why do you want to get a copy?
Because I played the hell out of Colosseum, and I want to, you know, I've always been curious about XD Gale of Darkness, and I've never got to play it. And now that I own a GameCube,
wow,
perfect time.
It is $100 on
Amazon. It's really stupid.
But hopefully at some point Nintendo does decide to start putting up GameCube games on the Wii U eShop. Granted, that won't help you either.
No.
But it could help the rest of us.
Yeah.
But yes, this isn't a Mario. We're not even talking about a game that's out anytime. Well, it's not out this week. But we have a ton of other games to talk about. And I guess since we're already on Mario, I don't know if Phil played this, but I did check out New Super Luigi U.
Oh yeah, I played like a tiny bit of it too. But yeah.
Yeah, I played a tiny bit of it as well. It's very interesting how the slightest change makes the world of difference in this game. Because, especially after 4 New Super Mario Bros. Games, you kind of know what to expect. But Luigi having a higher jump isn't a big deal. It's his momentum that really changes the game because he runs a lot faster than Mario, which means he doesn't stop nearly as quickly. And they designed the game around this, so sometimes you have, like, these really tiny platforms, and, like, he'll just go sailing off of it if you don't have the right timing with it. And it does make for an interesting challenge. They designed the courses around that, and they also designed the courses around basically being speedrun courses. everything's about 100 seconds, which is about a third of what you get in a typical Mario game.
Yeah, it caught me off guard when you start the level and then you hear, like, the time is running low sound happen right off the bat.
Yeah, it is kind of funny because it does give you that nerve-wracking music, like, you need to hurry up every stage, but it doesn't feel special when it's every stage.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's fun. Like I said, I've only played through the first world. It's a very interesting DLC in that it uses, I guess it uses basically the same template from the main game. Like, every level corresponds to something that was in the main game. So, like, you're not going to get like a radically different type of level on a water stage, for example. It's still going to be a water stage. But that doesn't mean it has to play by the rules that the main game had, which makes for some very interesting challenges and stuff.
The level design looks much more interesting. I was watching people on Twitch stream it, and it looks a lot more like they seem to have put the big coins in more interesting places and stuff. And obviously with the changes that they made to like how you move as Luigi.
I will say this much. I agree to an extent, but I disagree. I think that New Super Mario Bros. U right now, to me, has much better level design. I think this has more challenging level design, which isn't necessarily the same thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this is built around the whole aspect of this is a challenge. This is, you know, like getting all the star coins, getting everything in 100 seconds. You even get special bonuses, I think, if you finish the stage in, like, 40 seconds and collect all three star coins. So it does have that for it. But New Super Mario Bros. U is designed around just being a much fuller game. So it has a lot more going on in each stage. This one's just a lot faster.
How are the bosses? Because like
it's the same exact bosses. That's the one thing I thought was kind of cheap, and I guess it makes sense that you know. But it's the same exact boss fights. Nothing's changed.
That's the thing I noticed. Is it looked like the boss fights were easy because you can just float there for a bit as Luigi.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, it's kind of half and half because. You know, like certain bosses, you have to keep on jumping around so they don't attack you, and because he has that zippy...
And what's the downside to being able to play as Nabbit? I don't understand.
Well, I mean, technically speaking, if Nabby is supposed to be Nabbit...
Nabbit's invincible, and if you fall down holes, you die still, but you don't get pickups, you get lives instead. But it just seems like there's no downside to running as Nabbit.
Well, yeah, I think the idea was that he's supposed to be...
The speedrun character.
Yeah, I was going to say more like the kid's character, because I don't want to say girlfriend, because that offends people. But yeah, it's supposed to be kind of like... Because they are tough levels, so this is kind of a way to play with your kid and still make them have fun.
Yeah, I suppose.
And, I mean, technically speaking, they don't really make it overtly obvious that you can play as him in single player, but there is a way to do it. So there's that. I mean, it's fun. It's a nice $20 pickup. I mean, $20 DLC, I should say. It comes out as a retail package in about a month for $30. I really, really wanted to wait for that because I like the box, but I needed the Club Nintendo points. So there we go. And the rest of the stuff I've been playing is kind of old hat, so I'll just skip over that for now. Phil has been playing something for review. You want to tell us about Rush Bros?
Sure, yeah, I can talk about Rush Bros. Review is up on the site now. So Rush Bros is a Steam game. It's a racing platformer that is meant to be played multiplayer. You can play all 45 or so levels single player as well, but it's like a music-infused racing platformer game. And it is not good at all. Like, there's nothing good about it in any aspect. Like, it tries to do all these things, like put music into the gameplay, but that doesn't work well because the music isn't really, like, okay, so when you use music, it comes with music, or you can put your own if you're playing on your PC. And then the obstacles will, like, jolt back and forth or like descend and do whatever according to the beat, but it doesn't really go one for one for the beat. It's kind of just like the speed of the music at the time, I guess. Like, it seems very sporadic. The level design is not great at all. Like, it really feels very amateur in how the level design is put out. And it is, like, it's a very, very indie game, so it does have that sort of amateur-ish quality to it. But, you know, like, Super Meat Boy is also a very indie game made by, like, a couple people, and that was a very tight game. Go ahead.
I was going to say, even more so than that, we have stuff like the Bit Trip Saga series, and that does rhythm platforming. Well, I mean, that's a huge benchmark.
Yeah. Like, this isn't a rhythm platformer. It's just a platformer with music in it. So
what does the music do then?
The music just operates the obstacles in the level. Like, okay, so let's say, like, a spike is coming up from the ground. That spike will come up from the ground faster if the music's tempo is playing faster. Also, there are, like, these pulsating things in the background, like speakers that pulsate, and then those will change according to how fast the music is playing. But from my experience, like, that doesn't really have an effect on the gameplay at all, just like the obstacles. But even that, like, if you find the obstacles are getting annoyingly fast, you just change the music selection to the next track, and then you just go ahead and finish the level. There's nothing interesting about it. Like, you know, there's a lot of indie games out there that are very good, and Rush Bros. Isn't one of them. But yeah, again, the reviews on the site, more information, go there. But I have been playing some other games. Actually, the past 2 weeks has been pretty dry for me, but in the past couple days, I got a chance to play a bunch of games. First of all, last week my PlayStation 3 broke, so I have no PlayStation 3 anymore. I sent it in.
It seems to be a theme, because a lot of people's systems have broken this past 2 weeks.
Oh, really?
They know. They're self-aware.
Yeah.
You're going to replace this anyway.
Yeah.
My PS4. My friend was asking for tricks on how to get it to work once you get the Light of Doom. Whatever it's called, and another friend is replacing his because he did a bunch of games that I think he bought Injustice and his PS3 stopped working, so he has to replace it. But okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that happened, and that was I was just, like, a couple months ago, I said, man, my PS3 is my longest lasting system that I've had in recent memory without having to, like, replace it. And then it just... Yeah, not anymore. So it's sent in now to get fixed. I didn't want to get a new one. I have, like, the old school backwards compatible one, and I want to, like, keep that one and have it be functional. So I'm just having that repaired and sent back to me. I'm going to buy, like, a bigger hard drive, though, for it in time for Final Fantasy 14, because I have, like, no memory left. What sucks, though, is that my PlayStation Plus games are going to be gone. So, like, I've had a bunch of PlayStation Plus games on my backlog. Like, I've wanted to play Costume Quest for a while and a bunch of other free stuff that they don't offer anymore. And that's the only bummer, because I can't go ahead and re-download those.
Why not?
Well, wait. Can I?
Well,
even if they don't offer it?
You're still a PlayStation Plus member. As long as you keep your account, those games are yours.
Yeah, no, but, like...
It should just be you go in your download history and download it.
Yeah.
But even if, like, it doesn't, like, say Costume Quest isn't on there anymore, so, like, if I go to download Costume Quest, will I still have to pay for it?
It isn't on what? It isn't on PSN?
On PlayStation Plus. PlayStation Plus. Like,
no, if it's, okay, if it's on PlayStation Plus, as long as you can download it, you can download it. If it's off the service, that's a different piece altogether. Like,
yeah,
if it's
that's
not
what
on,
I...
No, I mean if it's not on the PlayStation Store. If it's still on the PlayStation Store, right. You just go to your download history and you can re-download everything you've downloaded in the past.
Well, I'll see what happens, I guess, when I get it back.
I can tell you what happened, because I've done this. My PlayStation broke down around Uncharted 3, and I traded up and got a sim at the time, and it's just you go to your download history and everything that you
I know that, like...
And PlayStation Plus is a membership. Everything you've downloaded in the past remains yours, as long as you remain a member of PlayStation Plus.
Yeah, but they're timed by them being free, though.
No, they're not timed by them being free. They're timed by when you can acquire them.
Yeah, like, if you've claimed it during the period that it was free, then you can keep downloading it forever, as long as you keep remaining a PlayStation Plus member.
Okay. I gotcha. Well, that's cool, then. That's good. Excellent. Yeah, and I wanted to play XCOM too, and that was on there. Good thing that's new. So for my rental subscription, I got Zone of the Enders HD collection. I have not played much of that at all yet. I played like the first one when it came out, and I've never played the second one, so I'm very interested to just go ahead and play those games again. I played probably about an hour or two of the first one so far, and it seems pretty good. The game in Wario is awesome. I was playing that today, and I played, I guess, the first batch of games before like the credits hit, and then you get like the second batch of games. But yeah, I love that game so much. I love the style of it. Go ahead.
I was going to say interesting, because a lot of the critical reception has been pretty poor on that game.
Yeah,
I think the problem is a lot of people are like, oh, it's not WarioWare. I wanted a WarioWare game.
But if it's the WarioWare, it's like, oh, this is WarioWare again. But that's a different. But no, a lot of people just seem like, it seems like a lot of the mini games are hit or miss. And it seems like it's like Nintendo Land, where it's one, there's a lot more misses.
I like all of them. I also did like Nintendo Land. A lot of people, right? That's what people say. But that's I'm not in that boat. Like I loved everything about Nintendo Land, and I love everything about WarioWare. I like the mini games. I don't know, they're fun for me.
Oh, mini games are awesome. I always hate how they get such a negative rep in the gaming community. It just tells me that people don't have any friends. But anyhow.
And, like, the style is really good. Like, it mixes Rhythm Heaven with, like, the WarioWare stuff. And there's, like, characters from both series in the game. And it's completely ridiculous in the best possible way. It's really good. I'm having a lot of fun with it. And lastly, I finally got into the Final Fantasy XIV beta on Friday. So I played a ton of that this weekend. That ate up my whole weekend. And I am extremely excited for the final version, because that beta is just a mad tease, because the beta only happens on weekends, so I just want to play that game forever. I love it.
So they're actually doing a beta, like a beta, to actually test stuff, and not just like, oh, we'll make people play for fun as long as they want.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, like they go through phases, like the alpha happened, and then now they're going through phases of the beta. We're on phase 3 now. And yeah, they do it, and each phase there's a purpose for the phase. Like they're looking at some facet that they're adding. And I finally got into the closed beta. Phase 4 is going to be an open beta, and I don't know when that's happening, but maybe like a couple of weeks from now. But and then the game is released after that. So.
Okay. What about you, Daniel? What have you been playing?
I've been playing a bunch of things. My most recent thing is Deadpool. I don't know what to say, really. If you love Deadpool, then you're probably going to love this game. Otherwise, don't buy it. It's as simple as that. It's a very run-of-the-mill action game, like God of War, I guess, just without the cutie. Kind of like, actually, it's better compared to something like Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, in its combat system, but it's very clunky, like... For example, if you shoot people, the guns aren't terribly effective to start off with, and then they eventually you get a gun that just kills guys in one shot, which I don't understand the point of, because you're supposed to use your guns to sort of keep getting combos. Anyway, and let's say you kill a guy, the last guy in the group, with your guns. It then remains in aiming mode until you hit a button to attack, like melee attack. Which is really strange, because you get a closed-in view, and you move a bit slower, and it's like, why didn't they just make it so, after a while of downtime, it transitions into normal walking again? And, I don't know, the game talks about being fun. Like, Deadpool, the character, talks about the game being fun more than the game is actually fun. It's just, here's a group of enemies, okay, you kill them, here's another group of enemies, okay, move on. Oh, and here's a mini-boss, by which they're all the same. They may look a bit different, but they're all the same. It's a case of you attack them a couple of times, you get this like teleport ability for quick dodging. So you teleport away from them, attack them a couple of times, teleport away from them, attack a couple of times, and it's really tedious. And Yeah.
So I had the game reserved to rent, but then at the last moment I changed it to Game & Wario. That's why I have that now.
You probably made a good decision.
I saw some stuff online. My favorite joke that I've seen of that game so far is, like, at the beginning, you get an achievement and it says the first one's free. And then Deadpool says, oh, it's going to be one of those games. And then another achievement pops and says the second one's free, too. I thought that was a pretty clever joke tying in, like, achievements into it. But, yeah.
There's some jokes in it that are actually kind of funny. But, yeah, like, I'm not a fan of Deadpool myself, so...
See, I'm a fan of Deadpool, but what happens, and this is kind of what happens in the comic books for him as well, I watched the Giant Bomb Quick a bit, and Deadpool, to me, works in moderation. With him, like, he doesn't shut up in this game at all.
No, he does not.
He's constantly talking, and, like, yeah, that helps that eventually something's going to be funny, but if you throw out 500 jokes and one of them makes you laugh, then it's just really, really disturbing at that point, and that's kind of where, like, I watched the, like, 35 minutes, and I just got annoyed with him talking all the time. And I get that's his character, but there could have been a way to do that where it wasn't so grating to the player.
Yeah, I watched the Giant Bomb Quick Look, and the rest of the game is no different.
Yeah, that's what made me change my reservation. I watched, like, half of that Quick Look, and I was like, nah, I'm good. Like, I don't usually... like, agree with them 100% of the time. Like, I watched the Yakuza 4 Quick Look, and they were just trashing it, and I ended up from that Quick Look being like, yes, I need to play this game, and I played it, and I loved it. But yeah, like, the Deadpool Quick Look, I was just like, yeah, okay, I get it.
Yeah. There's some weird things that the game does as well, like, at one point you play as Rogue, and you think, oh, I'm playing as Rogue, so I'm going to get some different abilities. No, you just get the same fighting style, and less abilities. Your teleport is gone. You can't do what are called momentum moves, which you build up combos and then you press two buttons and then you do like a super attack. The controls are really very strange. Somebody decided it'd be a fantastic idea to put the teleport button on the same button that you use to counter. So the little B prompt comes up on or whatever the button it is, comes up above somebody's head to counter them, and you press it and you teleport, and you're like, oh, well, I thought I was going to counter. And there's a boss that actually requires you to counter them before you can harm them. And so he runs at you, and you're supposed to counter him, and you press the counter button and you teleport into his attack, and it's like, great, cheers.
Oh, that
Thanks
sounds like
that.
A nightmare.
And there's a sewer level where you have to do some platforming, and if you miss a jump, you die, and the platforming is not very good. There's also a fourth stealth section, and if you get caught, then you have to restart it. And there are times where it says, press this button to do a stealth attack, so you press the button, you do a normal attack, and you get caught. And I was like, oh, great. So I had to restart that bit about 10 times. Yeah, a game that talks about being fun more than it is actually fun. And that's Deadpool.
Did you beat the game?
I haven't yet. Oh. Because it's a case of, I can't put up with it for more than about an hour at a time.
Yeah.
I don't even know why I keep playing it. Yeah.
So it's all about just Deadpool trying to like get a game made?
The story of the game is Deadpool is getting a video game made and he has to follow the script. And sometimes he just tears the script out. There's right at the beginning of the game, you're in his apartment and you can pick up the phone and he talks to Nolan North as Deadpool talks to Nolan North being Deadpool in the game.
Where do the other Marvel heroes come in? Like Wolverine's in it at some point? And...
There's a bit where Wolverine shows up and he sort of ends up being knocked out on the floor and you can bit slap him a few times if you want. Cable turns up and he helps you sometimes and Deadpool sort of taunts him sometimes, you know. Rogue turns up and you have to save her and then you play as Rogue for a little bit. So it's a case of like they don't really mean anything, they're just there. But it's kinda nice that they are there.
I see.
Because it's like some different characters that aren't Deadpool for a change.
You know, that would have been awesome, a Cable and Deadpool co-op game.
I would much rather watch a Cable and Deadpool sitcom. So
either way, it's
like this. And the funny thing is they have these bios, and like, so when you see a character, you can press a button during the cutscene that they show up, and it will show you like a different cutscene introducing who they are. And Cable's one is just like a song that goes, "Who the fuck is Cable? I don't know who he is," over and over again. Which I found that quite funny, actually. So yeah, that's Deadpool. If you like Deadpool, if you love Deadpool, I say play it, because you're gonna get loads of Deadpool. But if you want him in moderation, play it in moderation. If you don't like Deadpool, don't play it, because it's not great.
Or
and it's a shame, because
If you like Nolan North talking nonstop for about 20 hours, I'd say
I don't think the game's anywhere
no,
close to
I
20
think,
hours.
No. Does anybody like Nolan North talking incessantly like that for?
Uncharted games show well.
Well, he's a talented actor, but yeah, that's a little much in Deadpool.
Yeah, it's not a very good action game. There are some times where it sort of feels like it's slightly above average, and there are other times where it's sort of like, who designed this? You know, and it's a shame, because High Moon can obviously do much better, because Fall of Cybertron and War for Cybertron were awesome. This must have been their B team. So I've also played Cypher Elite V2 because that was on sale in one of the indie bundles, and I was like, yeah, why not? It's £2. And that game is not good either.
What is it?
Sniper Elite V2.
Oh.
Let's put it this way. Somebody thought, oh yeah, let's make a sniping game where the only viable weapon in the game is a sniper rifle. Let's put SMGs and pistols in it, but make them not very good at all. And then force you into close combat situations. Yeah, that would be a good idea. No, it's not. And the AI is very... They seem to be omniscient at some times. Like, you'll be hiding... You'll be taking cover on a corner of a building, and you'll be able to see people who are sort of milling around doing nothing. And then all of a sudden, they'll know where you are. And it's like, what? I didn't do anything. And it's even worse when you have tanks to avoid, because obviously they shoot at you, and they can kill you instantly if they want to. And it's a shame, because when you actually get sniping done, when the game says, stand here and snipe people, it is really fun, because you see the bullet travel across the landscape and smash their hearts into pieces if you shoot them in the heart. And you can hit them in the nuts if you want, and you can smash their skulls up. And it, even better, when you get two people one time, you see the bullet go through the skull of one person, break into little bits, and then all those little bits smash into the other person's skull. It's great if you like gore, only when it's sniping. The rest of it is just, the game's going to force me to use my sniper rifle in close quarters, and it doesn't really work. But I have played a good game this week, and I got it for free, and I kind of feel bad, because like, I didn't pirate it. I won a code off of the guy who developed it.
Then why would you feel bad?
Because it's such a good game. I wanted to pay for it. Like,
then buy a copy and we'll give it away on the show.
I'm not a philanthropist.
He's not that. He doesn't go that bad.
No, I don't want to pay for it that bad. It's Dust and Elysian Tale, and it is very good.
I still need to play that. Yeah,
that game is like, because it's kind of a Metroidvania beat 'em up, I suppose, and like. Okay, this is developed by one guy, you know. And it, for one person, it's an incredible game anyway, but for one person, it has its problems, like some of the level design's a bit weird, I'm playing on PC with mouse and keyboard, so the platforming is kind of floaty and hard to control, and there's one cave where there's like spikes all over the walls, and you have to avoid the spikes, and platforming in that area is not fun. But otherwise, the combat is very, like, you can mash buttons and you feel like you're being really skillful, and you can also execute combos and do it that way if you want. And you see this giant number of how many hits you're getting in succession go up, and everything around you just dies, and it's very, very satisfying. And the story's alright. I suppose the biggest black mark on the game is if you're not a fan of anthropomorphic animal art, then this game is not for you.
People are like raving about that story. I have no idea what it's about, but like people are.
I'm not too far into it, so I can't I can't tell you how good the story is.
Right.
But it seems at the moment it just seems like it's just enough to push you from place to place. I suppose it gets better later. But
there's a pretty good twist, so keep playing.
Yeah, I'm gonna wait until I get my 360 controller back. I think. Because I also bought both Joe Danger games because they popped up on Steam, and I thought, yeah, okay, they look really cool, and I'm not going to play them until I get my 360 controller back. So maybe in a couple of weeks' time, I'll tell you how they are. But yeah, Dust and Elysian Tail is very good. If you can stand the anthropomorphic animal art, and you like Metroidvania beat 'em ups, or either of those,
because there's so many of those.
Well, either of them. If you like Metroidvanias and you like beat 'em ups. Then play it. It's very good.
Go ahead.
Where, like, there's, like, a crafting system, and eventually you get the ability to craft wherever you are, and you pick up, like, materials from things you kill. And if you sell the materials to... Obviously, you put materials together to make things. And if you sell your materials to the vendor, then the vendor starts getting them in stock every so often, which is kind of cool, and it's got like a leveling up system, and you can put points into attack and defense, and the fidget characters, fidget's like this little flying thing that sort of shoots projectiles, and you can combo an attack to get massive, to get damage multipliers and stuff. Fidget's actually quite cute. I'm not a major fan of the anthropomorphic art. I can deal with it, but fidget's quite cute. I like fidget. The voice acting's meh. I mean, it's one guy on a budget, and you can tell that people using their home mics sometimes, but it gets the job done. It's a very good game, and it's worth every penny on Steam or Xbox Live if you like Metroidvania or beat 'em up games.
Okay.
Yeah, it reminds me of Vanillaware's Muramasa, and I really like that game as well. You know, that was also like, sorry.
I can't comment on that because I've never. Yeah,
like the art style of Dust doesn't appeal to me, but like everything else really does. So if you can
look past the art style, you'll really like it. It's a very
and
good
it's,
game.
It's not really like, you know, the animal people that I'm like offended against. I just don't like the art style in general.
Yeah, it's
the animal people I'm offended against. Yeah, I might check it out. It sounds like my type of game. As long as they don't have rare eyes, because rare eyes freak me out in their character designs.
I don't know, actually. Rare eyes.
Like, if you ever seen, like, rare character designs, like, original characters, not like Donkey Kong and stuff, they
like
have
Conker.
They Conker, or more like the Jet Force Gemini's people, where they have, like, these huge bug eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Hang on. No, it's more of a Disney kind of style.
Okay, then I can work with it. I mean, huge fan of animals. I actually think we don't have enough games that star animals, which sounds weird. But yeah, I get that humans are easy and humans are the best way to kind of represent graphics, but we do kind of need different types of hero archetypes. I mean,
yeah. And it's a shame that when the game first came out, everyone was like, oh my god, boycott, it's a furry game. That's just ignorant and ugh. It's kind of like the style of like Bambi and stuff like that.
The one furry thing that I really like is like the Archie Sonic comics. I was always into those, but that's about it.
Okay. Anything else?
No, I would. Like I said, I've got Joe Danger to play, but I'm waiting for my 360 controller, and I'm really looking forward to playing the Joe Danger game because they look really cool.
Yeah,
it's like, and I got them for free, so that's even better.
Okay, real quick, I just wanted to update my very, very, very slow Mass Effect 3 playthrough. Extremely show Mass Effect 3. I got to the point, and I'm just going to assume. Have you two played it? I don't want to spoil it if you
haven't. I haven't played it, but I know everything that happens anyway.
Okay. So I got up to the part where the Citadel gets attacked. And I felt like that should have been a bigger moment for me, and I'm just like, I don't care. And part of it is, and this happens, and it's very hard, you know, it's very hard to do this in games, it's very hard to do this in stories in general, but then you kind of, like, you stay on the Citadel afterwards, and most of the Citadel seems fine, like, people are still in the club dancing, and, like, you can still randomly talk to people and get missions and stuff like that, and, like, only one Fury was damaged in this whole ordeal, and I'm like, yeah, this does not seem like something that just got, like, literally just got attacked under the story. Where people are just kind of going on like business as usual, and I understand why they have to do it, because you can't really just say, like, okay, the story's over now, so you have to continue it that way, but it's really weird to see, like, it's just continuing business as usual, when everybody was pretty much dead. One of the counselors turned out to be a traitor, two of them ended up dead, and we are being invaded by giant aliens, and people are still in the club dancing, like, it's nobody's business. Other than that, I honestly, I never want to talk about this game because I always feel like I'm just going to come up bitter. But I still don't get the appeal of it. I don't see this huge, massive story that everybody talks about and raves about in this franchise.
BioWare doesn't really, like, the thing is with Mass Effect, I always found that the best, like, it doesn't do scope very well. It does, like, the very intimate sort of,
it does characters well.
Yeah, it does the very specific situations well, like in Mass Effect 2 when you go into the guest ship and, you know, and when you, just conversations is the main part. It doesn't do, oh my god, this is affecting the universe very well. It's more of a...
And that's always kind of...
It also doesn't do, like, the whole... You know, these are massive planets scope very well. The first one did that a little bit better than 2 and 3, because you actually got to, like, explore these, albeit, you know, bland planets, but you got to explore these huge environments, but then they took all that out in 2 and 3, but yeah. Did you not like Mass Effect 1 and 2?
I like Mass Effect 1, 2. I didn't finish 1 because of some issues with my save file, and I just got frustrated and never wanted to start again. But we had this debate on the show when it came out, and I think that they do a great job. Like, I think and, you know, some people agree, disagree, is that Mass Effect is a great character study, but for an actual overall plot, there's, like, nothing there. And that's kind of, like, I always go in expecting these huge shots because everybody's always talking about how it's amazing storytelling. And it's not amazing storytelling. It's amazing characterization.
Yeah.
Because I get attached to these characters. I like these characters. But the beat-to-beat, the mission-to-mission stuff, I honestly don't care about. Because, and, you know, again, this is the nature of the beast. This is a video game, and some of this stuff has to happen. It's like there's no real feel at times because you don't necessarily have to tackle missions in a manner. And some of the missions aren't necessarily story-centric. So a lot of times I end up doing stuff and I get sidetracked. And this happens in JRPGs with me as well, is you get sidetracked for like 2 or 3 hours in between story beats, and you kind of go back and you lose all this momentum.
And that's a problem with that, like, RPGs in general. Like, because people expect both a sort of grand storyline where there's high stakes and a load of content to pad things out. And you can't really have both at the same time because... The grand story requires a sense of player agency, and all of the side quests and stuff require, well, pretty much no player agency at all. So, well, when it comes to the story anyway. So, you know, I think it's a problem with RPGs in general, because Skyrim, for example, you know, you can just walk off and go and do everything else in the game for 800 hours. Oh, I've still got a story to finish.
Yeah. And, I mean, I'm not the big RPG expert, so my opinions on this aren't always valid, I should say. I think one of the recent examples, and I think this says it well, even though I'm not a huge fan of the game, I think it's decent, is the Death Story, where it's designed around the fact that we're not going to make you grind. We're not going to do anything. We have a story to tell. And how we're going to tell that is by making sure you're at the level you need to be. And every chapter is related to the story and pushing it forward in some way. And that works, but it's also a 20-hour, 25-hour game. And most people kind of expect their RPGs to be, you know, 60, 70 hours. So it's one of those things. So yeah, I mean, and the thing that kind of hurts it for me is I enjoy them, but the gameplay also doesn't make up for the fact that these aren't great stories. Like, it's a very passable shooter at times. Like, there's, you know, an element if you can get your teammates to do their special abilities, but most of the time, I use them to their own devices and just kind of make sure I take, because I can take care of everybody else with my 15 guns I carry.
The thing is that the sort of, I'm surprised they didn't even fix it, is the fact that, like, Mass Effect 2, it was a case of, go here, use this ability, and then they sort of go in the general direction of where you told them to go, and they don't actually go where you told them to go, and then eventually they use the ability, but it's like, where's your agency? Like, just do it now, I want it done now.
Yeah, that bothers me with certain missions, because, like, they'll get on a plan, they're like, okay, we have to hurry up, we have to get through here, so, and there's, like, no type of, like, I'll take my time, I'll go looking around for, you know, all the hidden nooks and crannies, which, again, is part of being a game, but it's like, your story's telling me that this is an extreme emergency that we need to make sure we're taking seriously, and the game's allowing me to do whatever the hell I want until I decide to push the story forward.
That, like, that stuff never bugs me.
It doesn't bug me. Again, I realize it's a video game. I think my problem, and this is something I try to avoid, but it's, sometimes it's unavoidable, is I feel like the reputation of Mass Effect has because the way everybody sells it to you is like it's this amazing life changing experience, and when you don't get that, you're kind of like, what am I missing? Because like I said, it's not a bad game. It's just nothing. The way people make it sound, it's like the greatest game of this generation, or one of the greatest games of this generation. And I, as much as possible, I also try to avoid that, because it's one of the reasons I don't want to play the ass story, because I realize I'm probably going to end up in the same boat where it's like, it's a good story, it's good storytelling for a video game.
Oh, you mean The Last of Us?
The Last of Us, there we go.
Yeah.
And it's just going to end up doing nothing for me, because a lot of people say it's not a fun game. Which, you know, you don't have to be a great game, I guess, but to me that's the number one priority, and if you're missing that, it's like, whatever.
Well, all they need to do is they just need to have one character talk about how the game should be fun over and over again. That's it. That's all they need to do.
I think The Last of Us is fun. I also thought Bioshock Infinite was fun. Like, I don't know what people... I really don't know what people want. Like, it boggles my mind. Like, what... I don't know what the populace considers fun. Like, They're games that you shoot guns. Guns involve skill. The Last of Us has you upgrade stuff. I don't know. Like, what do you want? But
well, I mean, and we're at this point where it's, you know, like, there's no one right answer for video games. Everybody has their own taste and their own opinions and stuff like that. So, you know, what I think is a great game wouldn't be what you think is a great game, and what makes a great game changes and varies. I mean, that's the point, you know, it's the nature of a grown industry. It's just that, like I said, I think it's one of the few games where I think the reputation has kind of had a negative effect on me, because I'm expecting something different than what I'm getting. If people sold this to me as a good sci-fi adventure, I'd be on board for it. It's a fun sci-fi adventure. It has a ton of interesting characters and races and, you know, intergalactic politics. It's basically video game equivalent of like Star Trek, Star Wars, I should say. I never can get those two correct. But if you're telling me this is like the, let's say, Citizen Kane of video games, yeah, I just don't see it. But yeah, that's it for what we've been playing. And it's a really short news segment. So word came out this week that Microsoft dropped the payment requirement for patches on Xbox One.
Again, without telling anybody?
But I had to tell somebody. But I'm kind of curious, because, I mean, right now, every wording seems to be like, this is a 360 thing. I'm not sure if this is carrying over to the One. because, I mean, yeah, you can do it 8 years later, but is it something you're going to carry forward?
Well, they should do. I mean, because in that case, what is the point? If you're just going to do, you know, if you're just going to say, oh, yeah, you have to pay again for Xbox One. And I think, I mean, they already have a fairly hostile relationship with some developers anyway. What with
the fish?
Well, not necessarily. Well, it's not just Phil, though, is it? I mean,
no, it's not. They, I think the Retro City Rampage dude.
Yeah, and John Blow and Double Fine and, you know, loads of people, you know, and unrelated. Did you see that Twitter fight that Phil was in?
I did not egg either one of those people.
I tell you what, after seeing that Kevin Dent guy, I was like, okay, maybe Phil Fish isn't so much of an arsehole after all. I take back everything I said.
But, yeah, it's one of those things where it's not so famous people acting like immature five-year-olds.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look good for anybody involved. It doesn't look good for the industry. If this, like, you know, everybody always, you know, gaming needs to grow up. And sometimes that involves the people who make games.
Yeah.
Because you can't have people acting like this and then expect your industry to be taken seriously. Like, you don't see movie directors get into fights like this. Or at least I don't know.
Seriously, like, Microsoft reversing their patching policies, or changing them anyway, and not telling anyone means they still haven't learned anything. You know, they still need to tell people because we still don't know. Like, this has died down for the most part, but, you know, people are still lamenting the loss of these family sharing features. We don't even know what they were.
Which can work out in Microsoft's benefit, truth be told, because if you don't, they can say whatever it was and like, oh man, you missed out on this amazing feature. We're sorry you had to get rid of
now,
it.
Well, now, yeah, this is it. It's now they can lie about what it was.
Yeah,
and it doesn't matter.
Like I said, that can work out for them. Yeah. I'm not, you know, it's not the most honest thing to do, but I'm not opposed to a company lying to get good PR if it's, you know, it's something that we can't really prove. Hey, granted, if something comes out in a couple of weeks and people are like, no, that's not what it was at all. Because, you know, there is some back and forth, like, this is what it was, no, it was, and this is what it was, stuff like that. But it's, you know, his word versus her word or whatever the case may be.
And I don't really see the benefit to removing the cost to patch a game at the moment, because...
Then that's why I'm curious if it carries over to the Xbox One.
Well, no, I mean, like, even if it does carry over to the Xbox One, I still don't see what the benefit of it is. Because Microsoft has this hostile relationship with independent developers right now, and they're not allowing people to self-publish on their platform. So people, and that's just, what that's going to do is they're just going to, it's just going to get people to say, no, we're not going to even aim for the Xbox One. We don't care about it. Like, Phil Fish doesn't care about Xbox One. I don't think Double Fine cares. The guy who developed Retro City Rampage doesn't care about it. You know, all they're going to do is, like, is...
So Canadians don't care about the Xbox One.
Wait, what?
Canadians don't care about the Xbox One.
They always thought Canadians were nice. They hate American products.
A lot of those indie guys are Canadian. That's why I said that. Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. You know, it's just... What Microsoft have already turned off a lot of people on a... who wouldn't be able to afford that patching cost anyway. And obviously it's not a problem for Activision, because it's not a problem for EA, it's not a problem for, I don't know, Ubisoft. Like, who does it benefit? It doesn't really benefit anybody. Like, unless Microsoft say, okay, all right, we've removed this patching cost, and you can now self-publish on Xbox One, you know, what's the point? I mean, like people are saying, the Unity now works on Xbox, will let you make a game for Xbox One. What's the point? Because the only people that use Unity for the most part are independent developers who don't like the whole policy that Microsoft has anyway. So, I just don't see how it benefits.
What about you guys? Do you like the Xbox One better now that they've doubled back on all of their policies?
It's more on my radar than it was after E3. As far as general interest, nothing has really changed with either system. They have solid lineups going forward, but nothing of interest for me this year on either one, really.
Do you, like, operate by a moral code that the fact that they tried to pull this shit on you in the first place gives you, you know...
I operate on a code that I'm not necessarily going to get into bed with them right away. I don't necessarily trust them. It's the same way that most gamers have that relationship with EA, where EA, no matter what they do, it's like, when's the other shoe going to drop? What nastiness do you have on the other side? And I think Microsoft has shown that Microsoft has had a ton of issues, and I think a lot of them get swept under the rug this generation because they've been so kind to gamers. I mean, granted, we've all kind of had the, you know, experience of the Red Ring of Death, but that was a huge part of the first, what, 3 or 4 years of the system. There was the huge hacking thing with them, which I think a lot of people didn't report on. I've had my system hacked twice now. you know, we made a big scuffle about the PlayStation hack, but when it happens to Xbox, it kind of goes on the radar. I mean, part of it was, like, EA's fault with the FIFA. I honestly have no idea how that worked, but I had my system deactivated for 2 months because they couldn't figure out what the hell was going on. I got knocked out of my system for 3 months. So a lot of stuff have happened where it's kind of like, you know, Microsoft is in a good position now, but are they going to be in a good position with trust come this generation? And I think it's going to be harder for them to overcome that, especially being that they have Sony right there at launch this time.
Here's how I see the Xbox One. I still need a connector to be plugged in to use it, and I can't buy Octodad on it, so no thanks. And, you know, the fact that that somebody decided to make a game as batshit crazy as Octodad, and then Sony said, you can have the stage at E3 to those people, is just incredible. You know, it shows how far the industry has come, even in the last 2 or 3 years. And Microsoft's just like, no. And a lot of the games that I have played have been and enjoyed quite a lot lately have been from similar developers that, you know, they have a crazy idea and it works. It shouldn't work, but it does. And, you know, a little bit of kindness in that direction goes a long way. And the fact of the matter is, you know, I don't like the idea that Microsoft has removed a feature that we didn't know about anyway, because that feature could have been massive for as much as we know.
Yeah, but
and
to be fair,
I don't understand why they couldn't have gone half and half with this, with it.
Like how?
Well, they could have at the very least said, okay, if you want your digital library, you can opt into it. You get the checks every 24 hours if they have to do it, you know. And if you don't want it, you don't have to do it. You know, you don't get the checks, but you don't get the family sharing. You know?
I think people who are on board with that. There are some people who want the option, and I think that's cool. But how do you balance it between, like, say, you get the check and I opt out of it? Can you share with me? And then I assume there's just a lot of headaches with infrastructure and given those two things. I think it was an all or nothing thing, and I kind of, you know, I don't think gamers are allowed to complain both ways. Like, you can't be upset that they did something and then they removed it, and that meant they had to remove some of the stuff associated with it that you thought were interesting.
I'm not upset. I just think it could have been done a lot better. I think it's a good move overall, but I just think that it could have been. We could have gotten more explanations as to how and why the restrictions were there in the first place. We could have gotten more explanations about file sharing.
I don't disagree with you. Like I said, I think the biggest blunder with Microsoft these past month and a half has been a failure to communicate efficiently, effectively what they were doing and why they were doing it. Because the way the argument was framed, right or wrong, was in the light of what we're losing, not necessarily what we're gaining. And that was all on Microsoft, nobody else. They had in their ability to explain clearly in words or in video, like, okay, you know, we're going to do this, but here are all the benefits you're going to get with this new system. And they were unable to do that. And they had two chances to do that on a big stage, and they failed.
Yeah, like, they basically just said, here's what all the features are, because this is the future.
I mean, and there aren't any Xbox exclusives that I care about anymore. Halo is dead to me.
You're not into Rise?
It doesn't matter whether I'm into Rise or not, because the game plays itself, doesn't it? So
I could just play it on YouTube.
I was joking, but like it just amazes me how so many people are into Rise, and like that's their game of show, and I'm like, are you what? Like, what's happening right now? But
like the only thing at the conference that was remotely interesting to me, and it wasn't at first, but it's been growing on me, was Titanfall, and that comes out on PC anyway.
Oh yeah, Titanfall looks good. Yeah.
Yeah, and I believe it also comes out on the 360. I could be mistaken, and
it does.
They haven't ruled out a PS4 version either. So.
Here's something that I just remembered: the World of Tanks developers not happy with Microsoft.
Why?
Did you hear about this? They weren't happy that people have to pay for Xbox Live Gold to get access to free-to-play games. And it's like, so Microsoft has this exclusive partnership with Wargaming.net, and even they're not happy with how Microsoft are conducting their business. You know, it just says a lot. And I don't know. I don't think I can trust Microsoft anymore. Like,
yeah,
they've decided that they're going to tell me what is right for me, be it the Kinect in the machine, be it...
I agree with the Kinect in the machine.
Well, I can understand why they did it, but I don't want it. I don't give a fuck about Kinect at all.
And I get that to a degree, but here's my thing, and I was supposed to write an article on this, I do apologize, is that we can't keep asking the industry for change and then kind of rebelling against the changes we don't like. Like, at some point, Kinect is going to have to become a fixture of the Xbox for it to kind of take off and to be used in any meaningful manner.
But you don't need to have the Kinect plugged in for the thing to turn on.
Yeah, that I get. But the problem with that then is that a lot of people are probably going to sell their Kinect if they don't need it.
Doesn't matter if everybody gets one.
Well, if you assume everybody has one, I get what you're saying. They did say that you can turn it off, right?
You can turn some of the features off.
The thing's still plugged into my system, and I don't know about you, but what with all this NSA stuff, you have no idea what's going on. I mean, you could say that's a bit too tinfoil hat, but if I'm going to turn something off and it's a peripheral, I may as well just unplug the thing and put it back in the box.
Yeah, a lot of people don't keep webcams plugged in. It's still, an issue today for...
It's the reason why, if you ever bought a laptop with a webcam in it and it's got a light, it's the reason why that they have lights, is because you need to know when it's on.
Yeah, but you don't... even without the light, you don't necessarily know if it's on or off or if it's relaying data to somebody. I understand your point, and I get it. As long as they allow you to hide it, I don't necessarily need it to be disconnected, because I think it would be a pain in the ass to connect and disconnect and reconnect it every time I want to use it or not use it. But if you can not have it stare at you, if you could put it behind your TV or something like that for a bit, I am all on board. But I do agree with the notion of including Kinect in the box. I think Sony's dumb for not including the PSI in the PS4 box. I understand that they want to keep costs down, but it's not
going to affect the playing experience. It's always just going to be an added thing. It's not like...
The reason why Kinect is in the box with Xbox One is because Microsoft want to make it a standard. They want people to use it.
Sony doesn't.
And that's always been one of my major beefs with Sony, is that Sony is always keen to introduce something and never support it. We did that with the Move. We did that with 3D. We did that with a bunch of stuff they've introduced over this generation, and this was their chance to start fresh. Because when they announced the PS4, didn't they announce some features you could do with your controller that using the camera?
Yeah.
And that stuff isn't available anymore. I mean, it's still available, but now that everybody doesn't have a camera, it's it's just a Joe and controller at this point. The light does nothing special now.
Does that make a difference, though?
It does, because if you don't bet on this feature, this product, this future, then you're just going to end up with people not giving a damn about it. I mean, right or wrong, Nintendo bet on the Wii's Wii Remote. They bet the system on that, and it worked out for them. They bet the system, the Wii U, on the gamepad. It hasn't worked out for them.
Well,
but
they bet the DS on two screens. And
yeah.
The 3DS on 3D, so...
Yeah. So if you want to, if you believe in your vision, go for it. If you want to half-ass it, go with Sony, because it's like Sony wants to push the industry forward. And I'm not saying they don't. They make some very interesting, compelling games. But at the same time, they always introduce these features, these services, these products that have no future because they don't back it up. And I think, you know, the biggest example of that, and, you know, I'm sure people are going to hate me for that, is the Vita. The Vita was introduced with no market. And Sony hasn't helped it in the past 2 years.
All they've been doing is moving the pillars around. Oh, wait until, you know, we'll have PS3 integration up and running, and it'll be awesome. And now it's the perfect companion device for PS4. Just wait until PS4 comes out, and it'll be awesome.
With all of Sony's cameras, though, they never make it out to seem like this is going to be, like, an integral part of the future, though. And even with the new iToy camera, they're not talking it up like, you're going to need to have this camera, and it's going to be...
They talked up the Move. The Move is a huge part of what their E3 2009.
No. I just meant the cameras.
Like, no, but the camera was you couldn't use the Move without the camera.
Oh yeah, I guess so. But yeah.
Which is what I'm saying. And the same thing with Wonderbook. Wonderbook was a huge part of that as well. They talked that up. Where's Wonderbook now?
Yeah, but Wonderbook has always like just been like a niche thing. Like,
well, no, I thought Wonderbook had a ton of potential. I think the idea of having an interactive book for your children has a huge market.
Yeah, and that's a niche to gamers and like the.
But that's my point, though. It's like Sony's so concerned with catering to this one group they don't want to lose. And, you know, it's a big group. It's a good group to have. But at the same time, they need to start backing their products that they do beyond that. They have enough studios right now where they can pump out a ton of amazing first-party games on the PS3 and the PS4. They need to believe in the rest of the things they provide people.
Here's what I think. Here's what should have happened, I think, is the start of the generation, you're going to get proper hardcore people buying the system, right? So give them a choice. You can have with the camera or without the camera, right? And then later on down the line, when you've managed to decrease your manufacturing cost of the system, when you've managed to decrease the price of the system, that's when you start bundling the camera, because that's when you're going to start pulling in the sort of more casual crowd.
They're going to be the people that are going to use it,
because I'm never going to use a camera, ever.
You have the same problem that you have now, in that there's not going to be people who support it because not everybody has one. There's a difference between saying that everybody who buys a PS4 will have a camera and saying that everybody who buys a PS4 after 2015 has a camera.
I guess so. I know, I'm just a person who, you know, I play on PC because that way I have choice. I play the games how I want, with what I want, when I want, and I pay what I want. Even if that's nothing, I pirate games if I want to. I don't do that, but, you know... And the fact that Microsoft's now telling me, no, this is how you're doing it. We want you to do it this way now. It's the reason why I don't buy Apple computers or Apple anything. You know, I don't like it when people tell me what to do with my stuff.
Well,
and
to be fair, that happens with any video game system. It's the same way that you can only use Microsoft controllers on the Xbox 360, or you can only use Sony controllers on the PS3. They tell you what you can and can't use with your device.
Well, not really, because there's not really that much of a problem with that in that kind of terms, because you can buy third-party controllers.
You can, but it's not like you can't buy a Sony branded controller and use it on your 360. And even those stuff, you know, has to be licensed out by Microsoft. I get what you're saying, though, and that this is kind of like, you know, what, even if you don't want the camera, we're giving it to you and you have to have it. So it's not telling you what you can and can't do. It's telling you that you have to do this. And that's the difference.
All they've basically said about Kinect is, oh, you can use a voice commands with your TV stuff. And I'm like, that's not really of any benefit to me. Like,
yeah, you see, that I agree with. And again, this kind of goes back to Microsoft messaging and image, is that they haven't shown a reason for Kinect. They haven't shown that, okay, you know what, this is...
And they don't even have any Kinect games. That's but the thing, though. There was no Kinect games. The only thing that they had was the integration with Project Spark. There was no pure Kinect games.
They had Kinect Sports, and they had...
Kinect Sports was a passing mention.
Well, it was announced in their pre-E3 thing on Game Choice, and they have the Fantasia.
Oh, I guess. I guess they have Fantasia, but...
Yeah.
Mm.
But yeah, I get what you're saying, and again, this falls on Microsoft. But this way, it guarantees that if somebody comes up with a great idea using the camera, you know, 3 or 4 years from now, they can go for it.
Well, it means that this is going to be more likely. It doesn't guarantee it because Kinect could still be a dud in 2-3 years time.
Oh, I'm not disagreeing with that. You know, it happens.
I get that it could it gets people wanting to use it because everyone has one. I just don't want it. Just at the very least, tell me that I don't have to have it connected for my system to turn on.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's going to be a very interesting few months. We still have, like I said, it's a long way to November. A lot has changed since E3, at least for those two. Nintendo is such an odd company right now. I don't know where they stand anymore. I do expect things to get better for them, but how much better and how soon is up to the
base. The thing I came out of Nintendo's E3 was, why would I buy a Wii U? Like, I've got all these games on my 3DS if I want them.
And that's not
I'm
true.
Getting Smash Brothers on my 3DS if I want it, you know? Like,
well, I mean, it's not. Okay, I don't want to sound grudgy. I mean, it's not the same games. I think Nintendo's problems, and this is something that they may have to fix. I hope they don't, because it's always been their charm. Nintendo is not a showy company. Their games do not show well.
That's the main. Like, you cannot. That's very true. You cannot. From the Wii, it's impossible to like look at something and judge if you want to play that game or not. You actually have to physically play it. And
that's kind of been there. Reggie said that at E3 during his interview with Jeff Keighley, and I think that would be a great slogan. I don't know if it necessarily would work for them, but I do think they need to get out there and emphasize that you need to play the games.
Play the game.
Yeah, I think it's a great slogan because honestly, that's what you need to take away from Nintendo games is that. You can watch them. They don't do, you know, they don't do amazing trailers. The Smash Brothers trailers were great. But, you know, most of the other stuff is just gameplay. And they're one of the few companies who do pure gameplay trailers. And they're not the most advanced system on the market. So having pure gameplay versus CG or in-game renders or whatever doesn't show that well. And their games are colorful and bright and they don't have human characters. So you can't really compare them to anything else. But you get your hands on with the games and you kind of realize what they have here. I mean... We talked about this a couple of weeks ago when I went hands-on with all the E3 demos at the Nintendo World store, is that I came out, you know, like, Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze was not that impressive graphically, but you play the game and you realize how, you know, one, it's very different, I'm not going to say radically different, but it is different from Donkey Kong Country Returns, and it's a nice-looking game, it plays well, and they fix some of the problems of Donkey Kong Country Returns. So
it wasn't impressive graphically?
I think a lot of people came away disappointed with how it looks at
E3. Like, was it smooth, like Pixar-y?
I'm sure people give me crap whenever I say this. I'm terrible. I'm always a terrible person to ask about graphical details. To me, something either looks good or it looks bad. I mean, it's right. That's really it. It's not like, oh man, you know, like, oh, it had like particle effects and the lighting and then the fans are coming off. Like, to me, as long as it looks well, like, I'm one of those few people who can go back and play old games. I always hate when people say, like, oh man, I can't go back and play N64 games. Like, if it's a good game, it's a good game. It doesn't matter what it looks like. And that's kind of been my MO. The only games I sometimes have issues going back to NES games. And it's not just because I think some of the early ones are just really rough graphically all around, and it's just kind of hard to see. And I can't go back to Perfect Dark, and that's because it has a terrible frame rate that gives me a headache.
Can you go back to Atari 2600 games?
I could if I had one.
Yeah.
I mean, I can go back to Pong. I can go back. I mean... Like, I game on mobile all the time. Most of those games aren't graphically that intensive or pretty, but they work.
My best example, I think, of a game that wasn't pretty, but I love it so much, is Wario Land 3. I loved that game when I was a kid. I bought it. That was the first thing I bought on my 3DS, actually, was Wario Land 3, and I was like, oh my god, this game is so good. I love it.
Wario Land is so weird by how big the sprites that you control is.
Yeah. And the thing that strikes me about Wario Land, I mean, it's not a graphical thing, but the thing that strikes me most about Wario Land is you can't die.
Yeah.
I love it not being, like, it's so refreshing not actually having to worry about anything in those games.
And they did it, they used it in an intelligent manner. It's kind of like,
Kirby's Epic Yarn.
Well, Kirby's Epic Yarn was different. I think, I was going to say Sphinx and the Cursed Mummies, which is one of my favorite games of the last generation, where, like, the mummy couldn't die, and they used the same kind of Wario Land setup, where, like, because you couldn't die, you could inflict all types of damage to your main character.
Yeah, and it's like, where, you know, Wario's an arsehole, and you like sort of seeing his pain sometimes. Like,
yeah.
Especially when it's kind of humorous when you set him on fire and stuff. Man, I so wish I played Wario Land Shaker. I never got to play that game.
It's a fun game. I
mean, man.
The only thing that's really weird with that, and it is this, and I think Kirby's Epic Yarn and Goodfill, I think it's Goodfill who made this, they kind of fall into this category where it's very simple stages. The real challenge comes from actually, like, they kind of have, like, mini tasks that you can complete, and that's where the real challenge comes from.
Yeah.
Like, beating the game in like 100, beating a level in like 100 seconds, so you have to kind of memorize the entire level layout.
And Mario Land's kind of like a Metroidvania as well.
I think Wario Land, a lot of them changed up. I think Wario Land 4 was like correct. There's also a Metroidvania Kirby game as well. I think not Canvas Curse. Whatever, but yeah. Anyhow, we have been rambling about nothing at this point.
Oh, I want to talk about, I can't believe, like, I totally forgot about this, but I have an Ouya now. I just want to briefly talk
about
it.
That's how important it was. You, you got a brand new system, and you remember reffing up.
Completely forgot that I had it, like, because I can't see it right in front of me, so it's like,
it's a chewy, tiny device.
It is a tiny, tiny device, yeah. Okay, so, I get the Ouya. Let me talk about the controller a little bit. It comes with batteries, and it's just the controller. There's no instructions in the box or anything like that at all. And the controller is just, like, it looks open and shut. There's no place to put the battery. So I was confused for a long time as to, like, where am I putting these batteries? So imagine, like, a PS3 controller. You know how on the side of the controller it has a line, and it separates the back and the front, right? So,
yes.
Think about putting your fingernails in that line and then ripping apart the controller, and that's where the batteries go. So, I have to take apart the front of the controller, and then there's one battery in each handle of the controller. And I was like, this is the weirdest thing. So, I put the batteries in. The controller feels okay. Like, if you played with, like, a Logitech gamepad for PC, that's what I play for Steam games and stuff, it kind of feels like that. It's not as great as the console controllers, but it's okay. The triggers are kind of cheap, but there's this touch screen in the middle of it, and whenever you touch the touch screen, a mouse cursor will pop up on your TV screen, and then you can use your finger and move the mouse cursor around, which you can just click on things, I guess, if you want. As of right now, it does nothing, but that's also something that I was surprised that the controller had. The grips are a little wide, and, like, it feels awkward to jump in there and, like, reach the start and select buttons and stuff like that. But it's a controller. It's not the best out there, but it's
hey, Phil, I've got an awesome tip for you.
Yeah.
You can use a PS3 controller to the Ouya.
That's true. Yeah. That's right. You can use other controllers.
So there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. So, yeah, I fiddled around with some Ouya stuff. I haven't played a lot of it. Like, I only played about a couple hours of it, like, 3 days ago or whenever I got it. But it's very simple. It has the potential, like most consoles, has the potential to be pretty good. Like, if it got Steam support, like with all the excellent games that Steam gets, which it won't, but let's say hypothetically it does get that support, that thing would be pretty great, because it's pretty easy to download and queue up a bunch of games that you can just try for free. And, like, if I could do that on Steam and just like queue up a bunch of games, just play them and then try them for free, and especially like the Ouya. I know Steam has big picture mode, but the Ouya is on your TV and it's easy. If it got that support, it would be pretty good. But like right now, it's suffering from the it has no game syndrome. So I just tinkered with a little bit of the indie games. Like this game called Towerfall, it seems okay, but they're the kind of, they're Android games through and through, which, you know, they keep your attention for about 5 minutes and then, you know, that's about it. But yeah, I don't know. I still got to play with it a little bit more, but there's
have
not
you had any,
too much to it.
Have you had any, because I've seen a lot of people have problems with the face buttons sticking into the controller. Have you had any?
I've not
any...
had that problem. No.
Huh. It is really weird that they don't like. They have a like. If you have like a weird way of putting batteries in your controller, fine. But like, you know, the cellophane that normally comes on top of like controllers and stuff. You could at least like have some of that with like,
yeah.
a diagram telling you to pull the faceplates off or something. That's very strange. That it's like, oh yeah, have at it.
Yeah. But yeah, like the launch lineup. I don't know. It's pretty mediocre so far. Like, it has some good games, like You Don't Know Jack, but, like, it's the same version that you can get for the PS3. It's not, like, a new You Don't Know Jack kind of thing. So.
You mean a game that you can pay for free on Facebook, or?
Yeah. But, no, but that's, like, that's a totally different You Don't Know Jack. Like, the one for consoles is different than the Facebook thing. But, yeah. It does have, like, a console version of Final Fantasy III, which, as far as I know, you can only get it on your DS and Android phones. So I might play that just because I can play it on my TV. But other than that, I don't know. Right now, it's okay. But I still have to play a little bit more of those games. So.
How did the game stick on your TV?
It looks... It depends from game to game. Final Fantasy III, for instance, seems like a pretty terrible port of it. It looks like it's like not HDified. It's definitely like an SD quality port, and it looks just like a blown up version of your DS screen, and that's kind of a bummer. But I don't know. Like hearing the music through my speakers is great, and it's not like bad enough that I'm like, I don't want to play this game. And then a lot of the indie games are 8-bit stuff. Like Towerfall was like the pseudo 8-bit thing. And then there's this other RPG indie game that's also like an 8-bit thing. And that's pretty much all the games that I've played so far on it was like the 8-bit style. So I can't grasp like what games, like, do they look good or not? But yeah, they look HD. And okay on the thing. But there are some games that are like, there's this Diablo Torchlight style game that I saw but I haven't checked out yet that's like fully 3D and stuff, so I'm curious.
That game looks okay, actually.
That
Diablo Torchlight kind of game. Yeah, that looks alright.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll just have a weird affinity for those games because I play them to the end of time.
Right.
Oh, I've got something I didn't mention.
Go on.
So they released the final season pass content for Borderlands 2, and it is the quality that Gearbox have promised from the beginning. Finally, we've only just managed to get it. Yeah, it's very good. So have you heard of the way Call of Juarez Gunslinger works? Like the way it tells its story.
No.
I'm assuming no. So what happens is you start off the game, you fast travel to this place, and they're playing a board game, which is a complete rip-off of Dungeons & Dragons. And, like, Tiny Tina, she starts off saying that the place that you're in has like been ravaged by the Handsome Sorcerer, which is obviously a reference to Handsome Jack. And there's like a massive rainbow in the skybox, and Lilith goes, "I thought you said it got messed up." And she goes, "Oh, okay, let me fix that." And then the rainbow vanishes, and it all goes dark, and all the leaves fall off the trees, and skeletons pop out of nowhere. It's really cool how like Tina will describe like environments as being one thing, and then somebody goes, "Oh no, hang on, that's not right," and then it just completely changes in front of your eyes. It's really cool, and There are things
that's awesome.
Like
I
in the
that.
Town. Yeah, in the town, there's like a riddle. One of the quests is a riddle, and then she says she tells Brick to roll his dice, and so the dice drops in onto the character that has the riddle, and Lilith goes, "Brick, don't slam your dice on the thing. You just destroyed her figure." It's really cool the way they sort of put you in the inside of the game. And they change things that they normally wouldn't ever be able to do in the normal realms of Pandora. And there's a lot of new content to it. It's about 6 hours long, which is perfect length for a DLC like that. It's kind of funny. It's not all fart jokes. There is one fart joke that made me eye roll big time. But it's not all typical toilet humor and memes and stuff. And I paid the half price of the season pass because Valve screwed up the pricing on it, and it was worth it just for that DLC pack alone. So if you like Borderlands 2, buy Tiny Tina's Assault on Dragon Keep because it's awesome.
I do like Borderlands 2.
Yeah, it's...
And it gives you something to do while you wait for your BioShock Infinite season pass to get some...
Yeah.
Of
because
oh
I bought the season pass, I'm not particularly pissed that they're taking their time. Just
yeah.
Like
I bought the season pass.
You expected something by now.
Yeah, the first season pass I ever bought, and I was like, yeah, I'm looking forward to this. And and now so much time has passed, I'm like, oh, I remember why I don't buy season passes.
Yeah.
But that's cool. Like one of my favorite literary tropes is the unreliable narrator. So that's cool that they take advantage of that in the DLC.
Yeah, and the DLC's got like a kind of, it's kind of a darker tone to it as well at times. Like, spoiler alert, if you haven't finished Borderlands 2, now's the time to stop listening. Tina says, "Oh, we got to wait for Roland to come and play," and Lilith
yeah.
says, "Oh shit, no, he's not coming," and Tina kind of shrugs it off, and over the sort of the course. Tina sort of comes to terms with Roland not being alive anymore, which is kind of nice, and it ends on a very kind of heartwarming cutscene set in the real world of Pandora, which is just kind of like, oh,
cool.
That's nice. So, yeah, it's kind of unexpected. They make a, like, people pop up all the time, like Mr. Torg's in it. And he's quite funny because he demands to be in the game, and Ellie's in it, and you know, it's, and like when Roland appears inside the game, Tina does his dialogue, and he talks like Tina, but in his voice when you play it, it's kind of funny. So yeah, if you want something different, like environment wise, out of Borderlands 2, it's really cool, and they do a lot of experimentation with it, and it works out pretty well. It's by far the... In fact, I prefer it to a lot of the main campaign stuff that they did. That's how good it is.
And it's their last DLC?
It's, well, it's... the last one that's part of the season pass.
Oh,
there are
right.
rumours going around that they're talking about doing another one. I hope not.
Like, apparently the Mass Effect 3, their last DLC, the Citadel stuff, is also the best one.
Yeah.
Is there anything you forgot you were playing, Earl?
I am good on taking notes ahead of time. I didn't get a new system. I didn't get any DLC. Well, I already spoke about the DLC I got. I will just give this note because it's something I honestly don't even know who listens at to the end of random nonsense. But this is a huge week if you want to build up your backlog of video games. Amazon's having their sale, I assume, to try to beat out Steam, and Microsoft is having a huge sale on Xbox Live, and that's including a ton of big games as well this week. So you should look out for all of that because it's going to drain everybody's wallet, and it's always nice to get some cheap games.
Everyone seems to be beating out Steam this year because GOG had their really cool sale. Amazon's now at it.
Wait, what's going on with Summer of Arcade?
Summer of Arcade starts in August.
Oh, okay. It doesn't usually start that late, right?
No, it doesn't. It usually starts in July. I don't know why. I'm so disappointed because I want that Ninja Turtles game.
Everyone
but,
at
yeah.
Microsoft is running around like a headless chicken with regarding to the Xbox One. That's what's happening.
Well, you see, that's the thing. But that's the thing, and we kind of hinted at this at the start of the show. July's pretty empty. That's why Summer of Arcade existed.
Yeah.
July's the perfect month for it. Like, that's, yeah, exactly.
Maybe they just can't get people to release in time.
Well, I mean, I assume they could have if they wanted to. I mean, it's not like they can't. I'm sure. Assume they hold over some of these games. But yeah, there are going to be a ton of games. I think it actually starts today on Amazon. They already have games up there: Age of Booty, Assassin's Creed, Burnout. Well, Burnout Paradise. I'm just throwing together words. Ton of games. Microsoft has. I saw Assassin's Creed 3 on there. There's a ton of games on sale across the board. And even if you want newer games, there's even Nintendo games on sale right now. Amazon has Animal Crossing New Leaf for $25. It has Monster Hunter 3G Ultimate for the Wii U for $35. It has a bunch of 3DS games for $30. I didn't realize how expensive 3DS games were until they had a $30 price.
Yeah, I was looking at getting Super Mario Land, and it's like $30. I'm like, I'd pay less than that for PC games. We need an Amazon sale. Where's our Amazon sale? I want to buy loads of 3DS games.
So, is there anything else we forgot?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay, then we'll be back next week. Hopefully we won't be in a ditch poor from all these games we buy over the next week. Actually, being that the Steam sale is coming up and the Amazon sale, we're also going to reinstate what we did last year, which I thought was a lot of fun. I don't think we'll do it this week. We'll do it next week. But we're going to have everybody pick up a game from their backyard that they haven't played yet and talk about it.
Oh, God. I need to pick one then.
It's a fun thing because it forces us to start a new game. Stuff like that. Check out the website. I honestly don't even know what we're doing video game related anymore. Oh yeah, Phil just had his review of Rush Bros. Like I said, I'm gonna have, hopefully I can finish my article on the lack of change that gamers embrace. We'll see. So for Daniel, Phil, and myself, this has been Dual World in episode 115.
Play the game.
Shit. That was awesome!
Deadpool! Hey! You did it, buddy! Look, I know we've had our differences, but look, I'll admit it. The game rocks! You rock, pal!
Pal?
And I hate to admit this, but we're actually not that much over budget. I didn't want to tell you that before, but now that the game's over, and, you know.
Hey, Peter!
Yeah?
Get your checkbook ready.
No,
you're going over budget, damn it! You gotta stop! You mean,
motherfucker.
This is my jam! Be all that you can be, that is what they told me. Made me all I can be, how they try to mold me. Mix a little bit of the best of the rest. Fight up Weapon X, well, we'll see who's next.
Deadpool!
Can't expect a miracle, bet not the devil. I'm your best friend if you keep my money level. Never without a gun, I don't hardly flesh it out. Survivable plans are plans I ever think about.
That's right, biatch. Keep those guns clean.
Yeah, clean as a whistle!
Deadpool!
In the crib.
A crib?
It means domicile.
I don't know what that means.
Crib.
Yeah, crib. Like, where we live.
Who's hungry?
What the fuck just happened? Who wrote this song? We can save this ship. It's clear. Okay.